I'm Heidi Moore, in for Brian Lehrer, and let's get back to Syria. So the reason why President Obama is not going to the UN Security Council for authorization to strike Syria is that he knows that Russia, a permanent member of the Security Council with veto power, is going to block it. Russia is the Assad regime's strongest ally. But why? Why are they so interested in protecting Assad? We've been wondering, and today, as Obama is in St. Petersburg for the G20, we thought you might be too. So we have Max Fisher, the foreign affairs blogger for The Washington Post, here to explain. Max, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So you've laid out four main reasons why Russia is tight with Assad. Let's go through them. First, you say Syria buys a lot of Russian military exports and Russia needs that money. How lucrative are those lucrative military contracts? So lucrative that he would be the primary motivating factor in supporting Assad?
Well, it's almost disappointing because they're not actually that lucrative. It's not that much money that we're talking about, but the Russian military is pretty powerful within Russian politics, and they see very little upside to allowing any kind of Western intervention, and they would like to continue having these sales. So they're kind of pressuring internally to keep Russia from blocking any action against Syria. But the other three reasons, the really big ones, actually have a lot more to do with the Cold War and its legacy, which is kind of ironic given that Syria mostly sat out the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is that Russia actually only has one foreign military base left in the world outside of the former Soviet Union, and it's in Tartus, Syria. It's a big naval installation. Russia sees that as strategically important. Second is a little bit more ideological. Russia still has this kind of Cold War mentality and a little bit of a national insecurity, you know, the wounded, fallen superpower. And that makes it care a lot about maintaining one of these last few military alliances, maybe even willing to do more than it's actually worth in strategic terms. And then the last one is that, you know, Russia really, really fears this idea of international intervention against countries like Syria. It felt the same about Libya, against Iraq. It sees this as Cold War style, you know, Western imperialism that's ultimately a threat to Russia itself. So it actually has very little to do with Syria itself and mostly is about Russia and how it sees its kind of place in the world.
Yeah, well, let's actually go through those a little bit more carefully. You mentioned that base that Russia has in Tartus in Syria. Why does Russia think that base is strategically important?
Well, you know, there's the strategic case for it, which is that that allows Russia to have warships in the Mediterranean, which it feels is important for energy reasons because there's a lot of commercial trade in the Mediterranean. But again, it really gets a lot more to this idea in Moscow that it really still wants to see itself as a great power, and it's really not. And this is one of these last vestiges. And the ability to have, you know, warships in the Mediterranean and to be out docking in your warm water port, it's very important to the Kremlin being able to tell itself, hey, we still matter for how the world works.
Right. And you mentioned that Russia still has these Cold War flashbacks of a sort, that they don't like this idea of Western imperialism. Is this out of self-interest, or do you think that this might be that Putin might be the next ruler that the international community decides to go after? What in particular do you think Putin would be anxious about in terms of potential international intervention?
No, I mean, it's really, really hard to foresee, you know, something like what happened in Libya ever happening in Russia. But he does, you know, he has talked about it and he has mentioned it when there were when he was reelected in a disputed election and there were protests. It was kind of in the air and it was kind of referenced. This, you know, is the West trying to intervene in Russian politics? Part of this comes from the fact that, you know, for many decades during the Cold War, the West was actively meddling in Moscow and was actively trying to bring down the government of Russia. So, I mean, that was a real thing that was happening. It's not happening anymore. But you can kind of see where this paranoia, however misplaced it might be, comes from.
Right. Oddly enough, though, Putin was supportive of France's intervention in Mali. Was that because it was in defense of an existing regime as opposed to an attempt to overthrow the current regime?
You know, I think that might just be a case of it was so clear cut. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was these were Islamist rebels had taken over an entire half of a sub-Saharan African country. But it's also just that that part of West Africa is not a place that has been as much of a player in the Cold War, so there's not these kind of, you know, entrenched interests. Whereas in Syria, you know, the Soviet Union has had first got its, you know, kind of hooks into Syria in 1970 when Bashar al-Assad's father took power in a coup. And Moscow's had a lot of influence there for, I guess, now 43 years. So it really sees the idea of intervention against Syria as intervention against Russia, if, you know, indirectly.
That's interesting. And of course, we know Russia never does anything by halves. So they're actively supporting the Assad regime. They're providing weapons, correct?
Yeah, that's right. They're providing weapons, a lot of which are, you know, helping the Assad government to continue to kill civilians and kill rebels. But there are also weapons, anti-aircraft weapons, that are clearly designed to deter any kind of Western intervention. And the idea is that it's sending this message that, you know, we're going to keep raising the costs of intervention, so the more that you push for it, the harder we're going to make it for you. They'll also do things like they'll just station troops in TARDIS, and they'll put people there, and they'll put ships there, which make it riskier for the West to intervene. But the big one is really blocking action at the United Nations Security Council, because it makes it so hard for the U.S. to organize any kind of international action. And it even makes it hard for the Obama administration to organize unilateral U.S. action, because technically it's illegal under international law for the U.S. to launch military strikes against Syria unless there's an imminent threat or it has the backing of the U.N. Can't get the backing of the U.N., it's probably not an imminent threat. And that really complicates Obama's case, because his argument has been this is all about international law. This is all about enforcing the international law, international norm against chemical weapons. So it's a bit tough to say we have to break international law to save it. But Putin has put him in that position.
So is Putin's support of the Assad regime so powerful that the regime would fall without him?
That's a tough question. I think they would certainly feel more compelled to negotiate. And that, after all, is what Obama has said all along that he wants. He doesn't want to topple the Assad regime. He wants to force Assad to the negotiating table. And if Assad had a fear of a UN-approved international intervention, whether or not it would actually happen, that would probably make him a lot more likely to sit down and say, okay, you know, I'll give up some power and negotiate for a peace deal. But he believes he can keep on fighting forever.
Mm-hmm. And how much does the fear of the growing strength of Islamist groups factor in here? We know that Russia has a lot of anxiety about Islamists in Caucasus and in Chechnya. Yeah. Is this related to that?
You know, I think that they would probably still back Syria even without that. But Putin does talk about that a lot, and I'm sure it's earnestly felt. And there are actually a number of Chechens fighting on behalf of Islamists in Syria. So there is, you know, there is a legitimate case for Russia to make that strikes or toppling Assad could empower Islamists of the kind that Russia has been struggling against for many years now.
Right. Using Occam's razor, is it possible that Putin simply doesn't believe the evidence that Assad's government was responsible for the chemical attack?
It's possible. I would be surprised, but I think more to the point, Putin has held a really strong line in support of Syria all along. And in the early months, when it was really clear that Syrian troops were just massacring civilians, you know, he was out there saying, no, no, that's not what's happening. You know, this is a self-defense against terrorist groups, and this is before there were any Islamists there. So this goes much deeper than chemical weapons for Putin.
Mm-hmm. And where does Iran factor into all of this? Because Iran is also an ally of Assad, but for different reasons.
Yeah, that's right. So Iran actually, as much as Putin likes Syria and likes this alliance, it's much more valuable to Iran, which feels very insecure and very isolated and sees the U.S. and Israel as existential threats, and sees Assad, which is this major military ally, as kind of a bulwark and as a check against Israel and the U.S., because Iran can use Syria to ship weapons to Hezbollah, which is an anti-Israel militant group based in Lebanon, and Hamas, which is based in Gaza. So it's kind of like Iran is thinking, you know, okay, Israel has a gun to our head, but we can use Syria and Hamas and Hezbollah to put a gun to Israel's head, and that way, you know, it'll be this kind of mutually assured destruction and no one will hurt anybody. So they're very concerned that if Syria falls, they'll be much more vulnerable.
Wow, it's like that scene in Reservoir Dogs where they're all holding their guns, hoping that it'll cause the others to freeze, right?
That's right, except the music isn't as good.
Exactly. So in the great gift-wrapped present of awkwardness that is this entire Syria situation, how awkward is it for the president to be visiting Russia now for the G20 summit, which is in St. Petersburg? There's this complete disagreement about Syria, as well as the canceled meeting last month with Putin in the wake of the Edward Snowden situation. There's also a movement to boycott the Sochi Olympics over the persecution of gay people in Russia. So first of all, why do you think President Obama is still going to the G20 this week there?
Well, you know, he's going to the G20 because he's a big believer in international institutions and, you know, building diplomatic support. He's trying to get some European powers on board for Syria strikes. He's still, you know, trying to repair the damage from the NSA leaks. It's definitely true that he's not going to meet with Putin. He says, you know, oh, I haven't given up hope for the relationship with Russia, but it seems like the reset policy that he advocated when he came into office of improving relations has kind of run its course. And that's not necessarily because, you know, Putin is some anti-American, although sometimes he sounds like one. I think it's more because the U.S. and Russia did have some mutual interest, nuclear weapons controls, that kind of thing, cooperation in Afghanistan. Those are mostly running out. And now the big issues are things like Edward Snowden, like Syria, that they disagree on. So there's not much for them to talk about.
So you don't think that Obama's going to try to change Putin's mind about Syria at all, give him some of that intelligence that we have?
I think that he could try, but I just don't know that there's anything that Obama can do that will matter to Putin more than Syria.
So what leverage does the U.S. have over Russia to get them to change sides on Syria?
You know, not a lot. I mean, there's a lot of – we have a lot of ongoing business with Russia, which is why the relationship will probably never fall apart completely. You know, there's energy. We have a lot of trade. Probably there will not be a Sochi boycott, but there's kind of talk of it. But, you know, the bottom line is that both Obama and Putin, for all of their disagreements, they don't want to see the relationship completely dissipate and completely destroyed because it's just too important for both countries. So I don't think that – I could be wrong, but I don't think that either of them is going to risk losing what's left of the U.S.-Russia relationship over Syria or probably over anything else.
Right. And we've seen some interesting personal comments. I remember last month President Obama said that Putin in a meeting looked like a bored kid in the back of the classroom. You know, one of our callers is curious, is Putin's political motivation domestic? Does he want to project power to his own people, that kind of Putin strongman image he's been trying to get across for the past few years?
Yeah, that's certainly part of it. I mean, there's certainly, you know, the more the Russian economy kind of struggles, the more that his democratic legitimacy gets called into question, the more he's served by playing up nationalism and by playing up, you know, the threat of the West, and I'm the big tough guy who will stand up to the evil Westerners. And that appeals a lot in Russia. And that's why you saw earlier this year the ban against allowing American families to adopt Russian children out of orphanages, which clearly had no possible purpose except to, you know, allow Putin to thumb his nose at the United States because he thought that would be good for him domestically, and it is.
Well, this will be interesting to watch. It's quite the soap opera. Max Fischer, the foreign affairs blogger for The Washington Post, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. And up next, how scarcity affects the way we think. Stay with us. I'm Heidi Moore of The Guardian, in for Brian Lehrer.